Hey guys, what's up? Welcome to another Sunday night. Welcome to Preacher Season 1, Episode 6, Sundowner. We are going to break the whole thing down for you. I think this was the best episode of the show so far, and we have a special guest in studio, Ricky, maybe. No, actually, he's here 100%, not just maybe. He's heard that one before. We'll see you guys in a second.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
This is all we need.
Frank, you're not dancing with us.
I'm sorry, I'm always just mesmerized by Mr. Dave Child.
Yes.
I gotta just see the sweet moves.
He's playing the drums.
Yes.
He's playing the synth drums.
Yeah.
Rocking out to Genesis.
Yeah.
If this is what's inside Jesse Custer, I can understand why he never wants to let it out.
No.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. But you just let it out.
Just the four let it out. Just the tiny Phil Collins just hanging out inside his belly.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Welcome to the AfterBuzz TV official Preacher After Show, Season 1, Episode 6, titled Sundowner. Normally I would introduce myself and then the panel, but I'm actually going to just throw to a special guest. We have Miles, Ricky Mabee on the couch. What's up, man?
Hi, gang.
Hey.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me here. It's an honor.
Thank you for coming.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah,
buzzing about after.
Buzzing about after.
Okay, on a given week, how many times do you get the dumb maybe joke that I made?
Rarely.
Really?
Yeah.
It's the next level. Like, people don't even want to try.
No, yeah, because the people are like, Mabe, and it just...
They really say Mabe?
Yeah, I get that a lot,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's my life. My parents.
You don't meet enough dads, is what you need.
Yeah. I'd just like to meet my dad.
I'm
kidding. I love my dad. Lovely man. He's a lovely man.
Whenever you sit on the couch, when people sit on the couch, they feel like they're in a therapist's office. But you should know this is a live broadcast right now. So
I love you, Dad.
Okay, there you go.
Weirdly, he named me. Richard Mabee, which could be Dick Mabee. Thanks a lot, Mom and Dad.
Dick Mabee.
Wow.
Great team.
That's great.
Cheryl and Kathy. Thank you.
So if the folks want to find you, if they find you to be just enchanting, where do they find you?
If they find you to be enchanting. That's an important word.
Usually there's the Walgreens on Cahuenga.
Okay.
Yeah. Yucca.
That's a great one.
I'm there a lot. That's
a good one.
A lot of ointments.
Yeah. House brand.
Yeah, always.
Yeah.
Don't waste your money.
Right.
No, I'm on the Twitter.
Okay, cool.
At Ricky Mabee.
And it's Ricky Mabee. There's no funny spellings running.
No funny spellings. Okay. No. That's where I'm found.
Sweet. Awesome.
Often.
Well, I'm
you need your home address now. We need
Lonely Nights on Twitter at Ricky Mabee.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to get into asking you all of the questions that we have about your character in the show, but first I'm going to wrap around here and I'm going to get to our special panelist, fifth member, villain, so-and-so.
Yeah, I'm the fifth wheel of this. Yeah, and I am Lucretia Lyon, and you can always find me at LACRETIALYON since my parents did hate me.
I guess I'm this camera right here. Why don't I talk to that camera right there? Hey, I'm Frank Moran. You can follow me on Twitter at HappyGoJackie.
Yeah, you can find me at MR Dave Child. I'm Dave Child. Also, keep in mind we are live talking, right? To people,
yes,
live chatting,
it's on the
live
tweet talking. Ricky live questions.
Go to AfterBuzz. YouTube.com/AfterBuzzTV and find us there and talk to us. Talk to Lucretia.
And guys, my name is Ben Bateman. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram. Let's all give a shout out to Roxy Stryker, who told me that she really misses you guys and she wishes that she was here.
She has not. She does not miss me at all.
Roxy,
if we can get at least one person who is watching this to tweet at Roxy.
Yes.
We miss you.
At
Roxy Stride, we miss you. That would be great. So sorry. Yeah.
Just tell her to save my Twitter handle. That's all I ask.
Just
please.
And guys, of course, we are on iTunes. If you give us a rating or a review, it helps us stay high in the standings, and we provide free content here at AfterBuzz TV. We'd like to continue to do that, so if you give us a rating or a review, preferably 5 stars, it would be awesome. Maybe 4, but nothing. You can just not do it if it's less than that.
Hey, let's get into this episode, huh? Hey, let's dive into it. Enough with the ratings. You know it's gonna be 5 stars. But we gotta talk about this app.
Would you like to continue, Dan?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. All right.
This was my favorite episode of this show.
So good.
Oh, yeah.
Thus far, I thought this was the best episode. I thought everything from the pacing to the humor to the drama, even like the exposition, and there was a lot of exposition in the beginning there.
Yeah.
But the exposition was necessary because
it's been stuff that we've been dancing around with for episodes and episodes and episodes, and finally we're getting to the meat of what this stuff is all about.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that you know, Ricky, at the end of the last episode, there's like a totally catastrophic event where you witness like a quadruple homicide. So I was a little surprised they didn't get back to the aftermath of that until the end of the episode. That sort of felt like they were going to pick us up right there because that's such an intense thing to have happen. But yeah, obviously we do wrap around to that at the end of the episode. You said you could get your pages. You just saw this for the first time?
Yeah, I watched it with you guys, and that was the first time I'd seen this, the final episode. And for me, it's weird because like, I'm on set for my stuff, but I don't actually get to see the other actors do their stuff. So it was
right.
So do you not even read the script for the whole episode? Do you only?
I'm an actor. I only read my lines.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Fair enough.
I'm a monster. okay. No, because I've read the entire comic series.
Right.
So I, you know, would steal scripts early if I could. Like they were, I was.
So you do. You have read it.
I read
you do
all of the scripts. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And I know everything that happens, guys.
Right. We'll get it out of you.
We'll try to trick you into admitting something.
I'm easily greased. Yeah,
so. I'm gonna sing you a song so all the secrets will come,
come right out. Yes. Or the chainsaw.
Or the chainsaw.
Whatever.
Either one will work.
Yeah. On me, yeah.
Yeah. Into the, it's what does he call it? His domicile? No, what does he call it?
Domicile, yeah.
He has a domicile? Yeah.
Yeah.
What were your guys' general thoughts on this episode? I was very satisfied, as I said.
It was great. I mean, Roxy has always been saying, and I think we got to give her credit for it, that the sixth episode is where things really start to pick up pace. I was surprised it took until the sixth episode, to tell you the truth. I kind of wish it was the third episode that things kind of got to the meat of what was going on. But this was so much fun. The opening with the... Everything that happened with the angels in the first... like act of this whole episode was amazing, and just the body count was building up and up. That was so much fun. It was funny. It was full of action. It moved the story along. We got to find out about Genesis, which I've been waiting to say. I think we even let slip in the non-spoilery part of the episode where we don't talk about the comics. By the way, we tend to talk about the comics at the end of the episode.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Rather than for the people that don't read the comics. Right. We have like a spoiler section.
Oh, cool.
So just because you're a comic book reader, I wanted to give you the heads up.
We try to be sort of vague about what we do know.
Great. Yeah. So this was nice that we got to find out what Genesis is. We got to hear more about the war in heaven, and I love that.
There was a, Licorice was just going through the chat feed right there. There was, and I apologize, I didn't even pick up your name. I think it's Mina Patton. She was saying the slow pacing equals more powerful. Mm. So considering this is the sixth episode, we're finally starting to get things going. We've kind of complained about the pacing of the series so far. Do you feel like now that things are starting to happen, do you agree that they're more powerful? Or it's like, I wish these things would have just happened sooner so we could have gotten to what's next.
Well, I would like to hear your first thoughts, and then we should maybe answer the question, because that's a great, great question.
Well, I'll just add that the underwear scene with Jesse and Cassidy was definitely my favorite part, as well as the very Evil Dead-esque, you know, just killing of the angels and coming back. Like, it was almost like playing a video game.
Right.
Respawning, and it was just so slapstick, I loved it. Yeah.
There's this very very specific tone that the story, the Preacher story, manages to achieve over like the whole entire story in the comic. And it's not even about specifics. It's really just about like, it's the sense of humor. It's the kind of pacing. It's the sense of humor of a stacked up body count of angels, and of they hit so many things right tonight. There was that great scene with Cassidy behind the door. Then you can see the darkness and the sadness in his face, which again, those are hallmarks of these characters that we really understand. There was anger coming from Jesse. Genuine anger and aggression, which is that's the character. Like, all of these things, Tulip was playful and fun and attractive. She wasn't just obnoxious. They made her so obnoxious this whole season.
I don't agree.
Okay.
But I feel like Tulip's been pretty good, and if anything, they've been adding to the character of Tulip.
Yeah, that's
in
fair.
The show.
Yeah.
But
it's fair. But my point is, tonight I really felt like, as a fully realized piece, I felt like the tone that I wanted, that feeling that I wanted to be getting out of the show, I really got it. I was like, okay, so maybe we had to go through all of that to get to this point now, because that's just the approach they wanted to take. but it achieved that for me.
Well, this is the first episode that I really felt like connection between Jesse and Tulip.
Yeah.
And it's always been more like we see Tulip talking about that connection with Jesse, but finally we have a scene where you can kind of see that interest, because otherwise these other episodes before were just feeling like Jesse really wants nothing to do with her, and it was just tough to get invested in that relationship.
Yeah, especially that scene with Cassidy behind the door and the putter, you know, how that was significant, and like he's trying to blow it off, but you could see in his face that it really was significant to him.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think this was the episode where you know, you actually do finally get to see a different shade to most of the characters. You actually, even Eugene, you get to see kind of a different side of him, although he's been pretty sweet the entire series. But he's, you know, when he confronts Jesse, you know, it's almost like you hear his balls drop, and you're like, oh, he's not afraid. He believes in what's right. And that's a really powerful scene.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's kind of break it down piece by piece. I'd like to start with first, I think, is that Cassidy Tulip scene. I'd like to start sort of with that relationship, and then how Jesse started to move into that, because I think this is something we've all been waiting for a little while, to see that interaction between Jesse and Tulip. But then also, you can see the look on Cassidy's face. He thinks he's into something here.
Yeah.
He really thinks he's into something here.
Right. And I'm glad they didn't draw that out.
Yeah.
That, I mean, certainly Jesse doesn't have all the information yet, but the fact that Cassidy and Tulip, they're both aware, like, oh, wait, we're talking about the same guy this whole time. So I'm glad that squared away. How Cassidy's going to be able to kind of check his emotions and how well he's going to be able to do that going forward, that'll be interesting to see how it plays out in relation to what we know is kind of in the series, see how that kind of differs.
Yeah.
Right. I like how we get that scene where we see the tattoos and we get a sense of everyone's past in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear from Jesse that, one, we have this great little, I think, hit to comic book readers that an old lady gave her one tattoo, which we'll talk about in the spoilers section. But also, like, the tattoo of the tulip and how it's my tulip.
Mm. Yep.
And then that goes into the scene where they're talking. And I feel like the one thing I was surprised about, though, was that Tulip was surprised to see Cass there. Because I thought that she
knew that he was working there.
Yeah, I thought she actually slept with Cass in order as revenge for Jesse.
No, because they talked around it that they never actually specifically mentioned Jesse. They both said, like, oh, I've got a boy. My boyfriend's in this town. The guy mentioned it, but they never once kind of made that connection, though.
Right.
Yeah, she wasn't aware of who he was at the time, but I did love the line where Jesse says Cassidy looks like a men's room wall.
Yeah.
That was clever. Like, I'll have to use that later.
I like their whole interaction there. I like, you see the scar on Jesse's back there. Mm-hmm. You see the tattoo, says thing about the mean old lady. I also like the interplay there when that scene starts, that it's just coming off the heels of Emily and Tulip. Mm-hmm. And Emily kind of giving Tulip that weird line where she's like, it's 10 in the morning. But then Jesse and Cass, he's like, it's 10 in the damn morning, and they start drinking together.
Yeah.
Which, there was an honesty between Jesse and Cassidy that I was looking for this whole time, that I liked to see in that scene where Jesse was kind of fine, like, you did try to tell me that. I'm with you, I get it. I saw some crazy stuff this morning. Let's have a beer, let's be bros, let's hang out. You know, like, that relationship is so important. And for a long time, Jesse really felt like he was treating Cassidy kind of almost like a joke.
Well, because, I mean, he does mention to Jesse early on that he's a vampire, just as more of an aside, and we never really see any follow-up on that. Not like we see with Tulip and Cassidy, where they kind of break down and Tulip asks him all the questions, but you just feel like when they talk about in that scene, it's like, all right, hey, I got thrown off a building, you know, I fell in love, you know, I was taken to the hospital. So I feel like Jesse's just like, you're a vampire, I'm just, you know, I bought that when the first moment you mentioned that, we're just going to keep continuing to talk about it.
It's like how two guys talk to one another. It's not like, I don't need to hear about your feelings. I don't need to hear about, like, I don't need to go deep down into what you did today. Let's just have a drink and you know, talk about tattoos.
This is the CW.
Yeah.
It's weird they've done they've really focused for five episodes on Jesse being really caught up with this mission that he has to save Anvil. And now he knows it's not God inside him, that it's Genesis, he realizes that he has this power. But I think it seems like his hold on this idea that he had is changing a little bit. And he's doubting himself a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially with that, where you see him right there, we're talking with Eugene and even with Emily, just like the weight of this promise that he made to his father, just, you can see it just weighing on him.
Yeah.
That all he wants to do is just save this damn town, fulfill that promise, and then just get the heck out of there.
Yeah.
And you also get to sense, because we found out what Genesis is in this episode and how Genesis is a the offspring of a demon and an angel, which means it's in a moral gray area. And I think that's why it's important in the first episode that we see it go through all these different priests and all these different, like, preachers of because it had to find one that was in a gray area.
Yeah, right.
It kept finding ones that were just solidly good or solidly bad. There's like a Satanist church that it goes through, and Tom Cruise, and then until it finds someone who's still questioning and is still trying to figure out himself. And I think that was a great addition.
Yeah,
that's in the show, and it was a great adaptation choice.
Happy birthday, Tom Cruise, by the way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's his birthday.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, shit.
R.I.P. R.I.P.
I can text him.
I know. I just left something on his Facebook wall. But that's about it.
I tweeted him this morning in VD. Okay,
cool. Immediately. Cool. That was it. Wake up. Tweet. There we go.
So I'm totally with you there. The gray area. That's of vital importance. And you even see it when DeBlanc and Fior say to him, you're just a normal sinning human. Which is true. And it's great. And I like... The darkness in Jesse, as it starts to come out of it more, is such an important part of him. And that's been the weird thing. It's like those... It was just last episode, the episode before. You see all these scenes with him sitting in the diner, like, be free. Mm-hmm. Use your best judgment. And, like, they were obviously trying to prove a point. There's a reason all that stuff was happening. It's supposed to swing us back in the other direction, but... And I guess in some ways that makes it so much more satisfying to see him in this episode. Like, just, he just seems much more normal as he starts to get mad. And but you do get the feeling, I get the feeling that, like, the impending disaster, like, it all is going to come crashing down.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Well, I gotta, because I think this kind of segues nicely into our guest and something your character had to deal with this episode was that gray area. Was it seemed like your character was going through trying to figure out how to address everything that happened in the last episode, the massacre that Miles witnessed. So, like, what I guess I got a curious I'm curious of, like, what your thought process was during that scene, or how you kind of approached that.
We touched on it earlier, though, like, to leave last episode with such a kind of cliffhanger where Odin blows four people away right in front of me,
right,
and then you know kind of at the end of that, you're like, well, is he going to turn and just shoot Miles, or is Miles going to become, like, Odin's lackey, or, like, are they going to kind of keep this weird relationship going between the two of them? I just tried to play that scene as, you know, surprised as I could. And I mean, he is a terrifying and intimidating... He's such a nice man, the actor, but still intimidating.
Yeah.
It's Jackie Earle Haley. It's Rorschach. It's,
right.
It's the new Freddy Krueger. Like, there was a lot going on for me of, like, oh, God, yeah, no, yes, Mr. Haley. But he's so down to earth and cool. And, but that character, too, just, you know, I like how they set up, like, now he can do anything.
Right.
And, you know, you kind of... You're always on the edge of your seat about what's he going to do next. And he was just so smooth with pulling out the gun. And just, the look of disbelief. And then it's, I think my character in this episode, and we don't see Odin and what he did in this aftermath. But for Miles, it's really about him wanting to do what's best for the city and the town of Anvil.
Right, because Odin brings all the money into the town.
He basically runs the town. Like, the mayor's just a figurehead. Like, I'm just really...
Yeah.
Just a puppet. He's the one that runs the town.
So you really feel like if you out him, you're going to ruin the town.
I out him, he goes to prison.
Yeah.
And then
The plant closes,
the city dies.
Right.
Yeah, that brings me to a great question we had earlier in the chat from Andre Gennaro. He basically, or she, that name is very gender neutral, I'll say that, but basically he asks, is the mayor, you know, Miles, sort of like a good counter to Jesse? Do you see him as that? Because you're actually trying to do the right thing, and you know, you even come to him to ask him. You're not like Jesse, who feels like he's got this power, and he's sort of abusing it in a way, but you're the good guy here.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think at first Miles definitely thinks he's the good guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, trying to be a good guy means you'll run into obstacles where it'll question what is right and what's wrong.
Hmm.
And I think Miles, it's all been evident up until this point what is right and what's wrong. And now he's like, I don't know what the right thing to do is.
Right.
And
Or which pants to
wear.
Which pants to wear.
Literally, it's weird how it's kind of portrayed on the same level as, like, for Miles, the right pair of pants is just as important as not, you know, calling the cops on Odin.
Right. Miles has turned out to actually be like a tragic and fascinating character, because there's that great scene, I think it's just last episode, where Emily says, you know this is never gonna happen, Miles. And he's just like, I'll take it. I'll take what I can get. And it's like, he's such a sweetheart, but he's just like, now he's just gonna get caught in the middle of this dark, horrible. He's caught in the middle of this dark, horrible world.
Yeah, I think that was one of my audition scenes, and I think they just sensed the patheticness of me in that, and they were like, yeah, he's... Give him a goatee and he's good to go.
Yeah, but like, about that is like, you don't even, Emily says, all right, we're just going to go and do a little booty call there. You still take the time to put wash the glass, put it away, take care of all that before you go. It's like, all right. Clean. A little moment to clean up after himself.
Yeah, there's a little bit of anal retention there. in the bedroom and in
the... Is that a deleted scene?
Deleted scene. On AMC.com.
Oh, I am. Right. And the panties just dropped.
Yeah. So, I want to revisit something that we talked about right at the beginning of the episode, which was that Evil Dead sort of opener in the Hope Motel, and all the body count and this like T-1000 committed demon angel, a seraphim. And just the whole explanation that leads up to that, and then that whole scene, because that's the most exposition we've gotten so far in the show. That was the most clear, like, all right, the audience doesn't know what's up. Let's just explain exactly what's going on. But the thing that I thought was the most surprising was they didn't give us any visual. Because when that exact explanation's happening in the book, it's not like that much. I want to say it's like a page and a half or 2 pages.
Yeah.
It's literally you do see the angel and the demon. You see them flying. You see them looking at each other. And I was kind of like, interesting. Like, wouldn't it have been easy artistically just to do some silhouettes or something here? Like, it felt very... didn't feel as dramatic as I feel like it could have felt. What do you guys think?
I think it's hiding the shark, and I kind of liked it. Okay. I think that if you show the shark, if you show the magic too quickly, you kind of ruin the magic of it. You know, if you show what angels look like in heaven or what demons look like, you miss the build. Also, it's probably a budgetary reason too, but I think there's a reason why every time they respond, or what is it called?
Reinvigorate.
It happens in another room and you just see a flash of light.
Yeah.
Because even that should be kind of hidden. That should be like a little bit underneath the blanket.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's more dramatic.
I know. It got gross with blanket. I don't understand.
Yeah,
it should be hidden under the blanket. Don't show it.
Yeah, to me, it was more powerful not showing it, especially because then I could think of a visual, like, you know, little Nikki, Reese Witherspoon and Harvey Keitel is what I'm thinking about. So it's more fun that way, right?
So Genesis is just Adam Sandler?
Exactly.
Okay.
I think you have a good point there, and this is actually something, somebody in the chat complained about this, not the chat, but the YouTube comments complained about it last week. Because they said we reference the comic a lot, and we honestly try not to reference that as much, but it is hard in some of those scenes because it's just like reading a book and seeing a movie adaptation, right? You have that image in your head of what it should be. You guys may be right that it was better to not show the image. It was just one of the few times where I was sort of like, you're describing something so dramatic. It feels like something else other than just Fionn DeBlanc just saying, like, this really dramatic thing happened.
I actually think that's like also... just the way we're raised now as an audience.
Yeah.
When they go into like those dramatic moments, I feel like we expect a cutaway nowadays. Like, we expect as an audience the, like, all right, here's A and B, and now, you know, we see it.
Yeah.
And I do think you know, it is more of a, once Jesse sees it for himself, I think he's kind of representing us as the audience of, like, when he goes through it, we'll see it.
Yeah.
Right.
What do you guys think after the whole showdown in the motel room? Fionn DeBlanc say, what about the other option? And he's like, no. Like, so they're alluding to something. I think we know what they're alluding to, but could we be wrong? I mean, again, this will be in the later prediction section, but
I don't think so.
No, you think
we're right, but we'll talk about it in spoilers.
okay, great.
Yeah.
When I got the script for that episode,
after
I checked my own lines first, naturally. No, but that scene at the Sundowner Motel and from the diner to the motel, that was the first 24 pages of that script, and like reading that, your jaw was on the floor because it was like, oh, they're telling us all of this now,
yeah,
and kind of finally getting into it. And just the description of those fight scenes were pretty incredible.
It was awesome. Yeah. I mean, it was just and great. It was one of the, yeah, it was one of those things where you were just, that's what I was talking about with the humor, the sense of humor, the kind of violence that I wanted from this show.
Yeah, and this style,
that was it.
Got it. Yeah,
and budgetarily, where you can still like, where you just do that really cool pullback just through the hole in the wall,
almost like a Fincher shot.
Yes, and you're able to just allude to all this craziness that's happening, so you can get away with that budgetarily, but it still really pays off for that scene.
And the casting on the, like, a 4'10" blonde woman to be the, like, badass angel who's, you know, taking names.
And
such,
like,
a good idea.
Just like one long shot of her just walking to the car from the restaurant, just like the, and they just track her the whole way. I thought it was just a really nice shot.
Yeah, and the Kia Soul. I love the fact that Fjord and DeBlanc drive a Kia Soul. They're fast becoming Fjord and DeBlanc. Like, I was disappointed the first two episodes, I remember, because I was like, God, they're playing these guys so seriously. But now I realize the point was they were trying to show us that those guys take themselves extremely seriously, but they're total buffoons.
Yeah.
And, like, it's great because, like, the humor every episode with him buying the cheeseburger, or, like, wanting to buy the cheeseburger a few episodes ago, or, yeah, them buying, like, you know, them driving a Kia Soul. It's like, these things are just very funny to me.
Yeah, and pulling out the Brookstone massager there, and I'm like, is that an anal probe, or just...
Yeah.
That was their first thought.
Also in their wardrobe, too, like, they're like, we have to blend in, so let's look ridiculous in, like, sport coats and cowboy hats.
Just so you know, I'm from Texas, so that just looks like a tourist in my way. Yeah. Anyone in a cowboy hat is a tourist. They're not.
Yeah.
So I've said on here before that when at the premiere, the person who cracked me up the most on the carpet was actually Tom Brooke. Mm-hmm. Just something about him was just really funny to me. He had a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
Hanging out in those situations, you know, the table reads and things like that, anybody on set that you can say that is just like the jokes or the person gets you every time?
Oh, I mean, Joe Gilgun is a man like no other on this planet.
He's pretty outrageous, yeah.
Just, I've never met a human with a bigger heart than him.
Aww.
And he literally talks to anyone everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
Is just like a guy's walking by and he'll just strike up conversation with anybody, and the most interesting man on the planet.
Yeah, he's a wild dude.
His backstory, his life story is incredible, and you can see it in his performances because he's one of the most talented things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Dominic,
Ruth, Anatole, and I ended up becoming really good friends, and Tom is, you know, so funny.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, because at the read-through, she was actually under the weather for the pilot, was Lucy Griffiths, and she ended up having a wicked sense of humor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. But the whole cast was... It was the first set I've been on where there wasn't a single ego on set.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's great.
Like, everybody was... I guess it's because we were all happy to be there.
Yeah.
And as an actor, you don't often get that chance.
Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, that was nice.
Cool.
One other thing I did like about that was an early scene is it's one thing for Jesse to be sitting there with the angels talking about it and just hearing the concepts, but to actually see it played out in front of him and just the dawn of realization on his face when they see the surfing get killed and then reinvigorate and come right back out of the restaurant and just seem like, what? This is for real?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just loved that whole moment there.
It also played upon, like, something that we're seeing more of in this episode is Jesse's hero complex and the idea that he has to be the guy to save the day, or that he feels like he can save the town. And you see that in and how he could be wrong in so many ways, and you see that even when he goes to save the woman.
Yeah.
When he goes to be like, oh my God, they're beating this small, defenseless woman, and then gets, like, you know, picked up by the neck. And then... And it kind of changes his whole worldview in a lot of ways, and then introduce the idea that he's a part of this heaven and hell fighting kind of influences him in an interesting way now, because it almost says, like, I'm definitely fighting for God now.
Yeah.
I definitely have, like, the power of God in me, so I gotta lean into it, which is something that's not in the comics, and it's nice to see here. Mm. I think that journey is an interesting way of getting to know the character more.
There was definitely a lot. I had a great sense of that tonight. Like, that journey we've been through now to get to this point after six, a lot of the things that we had questions about that we had talked a lot about in those first few episodes, some of that stuff does start to make a lot more sense to me now. Jesse's character, it might have been hard, I think, to really start out the gate with him being the character we expected he was going to be right away. It might not have actually been as convincing to an audience as we expected it was going to be. So it might be necessary to take us through this journey to get us there, you know?
But we see him, like, stare down a barrel of a gun.
Yeah.
We see him... you know, fight like a badass, and you see, you do see that side of him that is kind of this badass side that you're hoping will build, that you saw in the pilot episode.
Yeah,
that was one moment when he smirked in that fight in the pilot.
Oh yeah,
that to me was like, okay, so that's the glimpse of Jesse to come.
Yeah.
Or of Jesse that was as well, like his life with Tulip beforehand, but also of the Jesse to come.
Completely, and I think we're all hoping it just keeps going in that direction.
Yeah.
So talking about nice people, Ian Coletti is the sweetheart, nicest kid in the world.
But offensively nice, where it's like, dude, life hasn't kicked you in the balls yet, man, because you were too nice for this world. And so talented as an actor, but as a musician, outrageous.
And he's so sweet and handsome. I feel bad that no one gets to see what he actually looks like on the show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's got the giant prosthetic on. So he had a bit of an arc tonight. Definitely way more out of him than we've seen so far. You know, he's sort of like invited to hang out with these kids at the lunch table, and then they're like, hey, well, let's show you this cool tunnel and we're gonna light off fireworks. And the whole time I was like, I think it beat him up. What's going on here?
Right. It's set up to make you think that there's gonna be a turn, and it's gonna turn into something terrible.
But then he's uncomfortable with the idea that people are accepting him now.
Right. Well, he's a great foil for Jesse right now, because he's and that's something that I did not expect from him.
Completely.
Because, one thing that I will say, as comic book readers, he's someone that Jesse just helps.
He's just kind of comic relief in the book.
Yeah, he's like this dame that needs help all the time. You know, he's like that Jesse comes and saves every now and then.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see him change in such a good way. This is a great adaptation where they're making it so he's the moral compass of the show. And you see him dealing with a gift from God, which is acceptance and forgiveness, and him realizing that that's not the way to do things.
Yeah.
So his pushback against the gift for God is he gets to show that to Jesse and really push it in his face that this is not, you're not going the same route. And it also is Jesse's discussion with Miles, where he's talking about what listening to the right voice in your head and where to go. It's very much like dealing with that same sort of theme throughout this whole episode.
I think like you said, it's a great mirror as well, because Jesse has the quick fix tool for everything now. And, you know, Eugene's whole concept is to earn it, you know, and that's the big difference, is like, I can do it because I have the word of God, or Eugene saying, no, I want to really earn God's forgiveness.
Right.
And then obviously he doesn't earn anything good at the end of the episode.
Where is he?
He gets condemned to a horrible place.
Yeah, it sounds like he gets sent to hell.
Yeah.
Is that the voice of God sent him to hell?
Yeah.
So what does that mean?
I don't know, because if he can't hear him to tell him to come back from hell, how can he ever get him back? Then do we start to get into this?
I know where he goes. I can't say anything.
No, you can't say anything.
Well, the gates of hell are open since Lucifer is in Los Angeles. Right. Oh, I don't know.
Right. It's okay, Ricky. We've turned off the mics. Nobody can. It's just us.
Great. Scoop.
They've made a bunch of references since the first episode of, like, they keep saying things like, are you talking to God? Well, either God's not there, or he sounds a lot like you. Or Eugene in the first episode saying things like, I'm talking to him, but I just don't hear anything. Or Jesse sitting there saying, all right, one last time, I'm looking for something, right? And then he gets Genesis, he thinks it's the voice of God. They haven't said to us, God isn't there, but they keep suggesting it.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again.
No, I feel, and whether we want to say that for predictions or anything like that, but I certainly feel like he's being set up for a fall, and that's going to play into it.
Yeah,
for
so
sure.
We will get to that in the comic book related predictions, but I do think it's interesting they're dangling that carrot. If you're paying attention for it, it certainly seems like they say it over and over and over again.
Yeah, I feel like this is definitely going to be his motivation going forward, and we'll see him become the more Jesse Custer that we've kind of come to expect if you've read the series.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should also talk about, we should get to, like, Emily and Tulip.
Oh, yeah, because they had a great scene together. So Tulip storms in.
It was, like, that was a really solid arc.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's one thing that that struck me the most, and because Tulip storms in and breaks breaks that little art thing.
Yeah, I love the art thing.
That's a great
my kid's art thing.
Yeah. Broke the kid's art thing because she doesn't even know what it is supposed to be. And then you see Tulip immediately go like, okay, I'll fix it. And go in and you see this, you see her watching Emily and have this connection with her as a mom, and then you see that register, and then she lets out this information that is a total surprise.
She had a kid once.
That she had a kid once.
Yeah. Yep.
That's new information.
Well, do you notice they're doing a lot of things with Tulip? So she is definitely the most newly invented character for this show, without a doubt, of those three main characters. And so they've done a few things differently, but one of the ones they keep poking at, I thought this was really interesting. They did this tonight. At one point, Emily says she writes ammonia, and Tulip points and says, "What's that word?" They're making her seem like she really, because her mom worked in the brothel and everything like that. They're really making Tulip seem like she comes from this, like, she's a little crude. She's not as well educated. She's a little rougher around the edges. She gets by on her guile and her wit, kind of thing. Which I can see why they would write her that way, because I can see Sir Jesse's character would find that very charming. But it's a total departure from what we thought we were getting from this character, obviously. Mm-hmm. That's got to be the biggest difference. And then this thing with the kid, that's another one of these things where you're like, man, I don't know what to expect out of this character at all.
Yeah, it's making her way more three-dimensional than she was in the comics.
Completely.
So Tulip is definitely an improved character. Yeah.
I think so, too. I actually think so, too, because I think you see the comic is great, but you see the Garth Ennis really kind of struggle with how to, like, write a female character.
Yeah.
And with this, she's very strong. And I also, this revelation of a kid makes me curious about actually what Carlos did.
Yeah.
Because they keep talking about this Carlos and they have to go after him. And you think it's a revenge for some scheme gone wrong.
Yeah.
But now I think it has something to do with this kid.
Oh, yeah.
So, and if it's her kid, maybe it's Jesse's kid.
Could be.
And that's like, I'm looking at you, like, because you've read all the scripts.
Yeah. You can't say he's going to make faces. Let's watch him.
Yeah.
But I wasn't
listening to a thing you guys were saying.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
My own. Yeah.
Plan your Walgreens trip for later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trying to think of all the pants that you own. Which pair of pants.
What do I wear tomorrow?
Yeah. Well, and certainly, Ricky, you're not sitting in the writer's room, certainly when they're breaking out the season and stuff, but you read the scripts and you've had a chance to talk to Seth and Evan and everybody. Mm-hmm. Do they kind of share, like, their kind of philosophy or their kind of point of view about how they're kind of, you know, breaking down this season, kind of just how they're reinterpreting the series?
Yeah, I mean, I talked with them early on, you know, just as, weirdly, I've known Seth and Evan as Canadians for, you know, over a decade. Yes.
Oh, really?
Just as all Canadians know Canadians?
We all know each other. We literally do. And 10 years ago,
and I've dated, like,
Seth
half of them.
Handed me book one of Preacher 10 years ago.
And really?
Like, wow. Dude, you got to read this. It's amazing.
And I was like,
really good impression.
And I was like, oh, thanks, dude. And I never read it. Until I got the audition for it. And then I read the entire series. But
and you were like, Seth, I've read this like 7 times, man.
Yeah.
So much.
Where is this mayor character?
Shit comic. but talking with them, they're the biggest fans of the Preacher comic you'll ever meet. Like, it's all he's ever wanted to do, both of them, Seth and Evan. So for them to, like, you know, these tweaks and to go rewrite kind of their, you know, their holy grail, to go and tweak that, you know, it'd be like, you know, the pub going, no, I'm just going to rewrite these parts of the Bible. I think they struggled and toiled with what would work, but with the writer's room they amassed, they really found the best routes to go down budgetarily. Knowing what network it was going to be on and not being able to push the envelope in certain ways, how could they still make it seem violent and kind of, you know, fun? So they struggled with a lot of the stuff, but ultimately the choices they made was just for the love of the project.
Now, with the renewal for season 2, anybody who's listening or watching this that doesn't know, it was renewed this week for 13 episodes next season. Do you get a...
That was a genuine woo.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to distract from anything.
No,
but it did exactly that.
You sound you sound exactly like my girlfriend in the bedroom.
AfterBuzz After Dark.
Yeah.
Do you get a sense at all from talking to everybody about season two? I mean, no specifics here, but like, do you have an idea of what happens? Kind of the path, where the way they're going to start to weave this whole story? And
yeah. They early on, it was, you know, without even getting the green light from AMC, they had the vision of many seasons on.
Evan told me they were like, we're doing this like we have seven. So it's like, we're doing this like we have seven seasons. We're doing the whole story.
Exactly. But that's why they're taking their time. And that, like, I think that goes back to the pacing and like the slow reveal of information.
Yeah.
Is because they are expecting to have, you know, seven seasons where they can really, you know, tell the story.
Right.
A new story too, because it's it isn't the comic.
So should we have a few minutes left. I think we should, anything else with Emily and Tulip we want to address? I mean, we sort of mentioned the awkwardness. Then obviously, do we think that Tulip's her offering to help with all the church stuff, is that just a way to kind of get in Jesse's good graces, or is that her just sort of trying to be part of the good side of things, the righteous side of things?
I think a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I think she's trying to stay close to Jesse.
Yeah.
I think she realizes if she doesn't stay close, she's going to lose him.
Yeah.
I think both their performances are so layered, too, that, like, there's so much to interpret. But for me, it's, you know, Emily's the good girl, Tulip's the bad girl.
Yeah.
And she assumes that Jesse's kind of into the good girl now. So maybe if she tweaks her, you know, way of being, maybe it'll make Jesse come around quicker if she ends up being the good girl.
It's funny that they haven't given us any, like, the romance-wise, Cassidy and Tulip, they've, like, hinted at, and I'm a little more than hinted, but as far as a real romantic connection.
But hinting, you mean them having sex in the back of a car.
Yeah,
sex. Hinted at sex.
But I mean, as far as it mattering. But as far as Jesse, up until this episode, his actual commitment to either of them had been totally nothing.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, obviously you just sort of expect that it was going to be Jesse and Tulip, but by the same standard, like, it did, seemed like he was kind of pushing Emily away the whole time, but I mean, at the same time, what was he really doing to show you that he was into Tulip?
No. I mean, I felt like Emily would love for him to say like, "Hey, I'd like you know to do something with you." But when he throws out something like this, like, "Boy, you and Tulip really did a lot of stuff to get this together," and she's like, "Tulip, yeah, okay, I'm gonna get Eugene now." Just like, all right.
I loved how she was so passive aggressive. I was like, "Go, Emily."
Yeah. Also, I think to be fair, that Jesse has done nothing to push away Emily, but also hasn't done anything to bring her closer, and he does as much as he can to try and push away Tulip.
Yeah.
And the pushing away Tulip is kind of sign that he needs to push her away in order, because otherwise he would just want her to...
And we got that moment in the closet tonight, which was definitely a big moment.
Well, and I think especially when Tulip comes in and just starts yelling at Emily at the beginning of that scene, I feel like that really fills in a lot of how she was feeling, why she slept with Cassidy.
Yeah.
Feeling, you know, like that Jesse had moved on past her and was really focused on Emily. So I feel like that was more just out of just, I don't know, like, whether just like revenge or just want to hurt him or do something different.
Definitely seemed like
revenge. Yeah.
So let's jump into predictions. Well, this is going to be our basic predictions. We're going to do this is all based on the show. We'll do a quick sign off and then we'll go into the spoilery After Dark predictions.
And now, AfterBuzz.
Oh, it's getting real now.
And starting with predictions, Ricky, do you want to? No,
not. This is where I think it's going to go.
I think we're going to. I think he's going to go to hell. Yeah. I think I wouldn't. This isn't like comic book related at all because it doesn't really happen in the comics. But like, I feel like he's going to hell, and that we're going to go to hell to get our space back.
Maybe,
And you just opened it up for me to mention my favorite character of all time again. If he goes to hell, John Constantine is there right now, according to Oliver. Can we see that? To be fair,
if you want to get real geeky this is a whole different universe.
I know.
This is not the same. This is not the same Vertigo universe as Lucifer.
But perhaps hell is multi-dimensional.
All right, guys. We've got limited time.
I have a feeling that if we're given what they're alluding to when they said, "Should we do the other option?" No, I feel like that's alluding to something here. So I feel like we're going to see a little bit more of the cowboy next episode.
Okay. And I will say that I really got the sense as they were building towards the end of this episode. I mean, I even stopped the episode at one point and looked over and was like, is this episode going to end in total horrible tragedy? Is something going to bad happen with the service? Because it really I got the sense that Jesse was kind of setting that up. There was a scene that he said to Emily, this is all working now. This is all good. And you were just like, no, it's not all good. It's not all working. You're wrong. I think that by the end of the season, we are going to see some sort of cataclysmic reaction to him using this word incorrectly. Whatever it is. I don't exactly know how they're going to do it, but it's going to be something big. That would be mine.
Oh, I got another prediction I thought of for this episode. I'm sorry, Lucretia. We should get to you first.
Oh, I'm good. Go ahead.
Okay. I think the church is going to fall into a sinkhole.
Oh. That's a good idea.
Yes. That's my prediction. Because
they've still not listening.
No.
Okay, cool. Because they've introduced the idea of sinkholes.
Right.
I think there's that weird steam pipe that I'm not sure where, maybe it's the hidden kids, but I think it's also to do with something, I think, because the Quincannon is a meat and power association, and I think he might be fracking or something, which is a good way to bring it into kind of modern times.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And that he could end up destroying the town and or by doing this fracking and maybe bring the church and the people inside of it, sorry, mayor, into a sinkhole.
Fair enough.
That seems nicer than what me and Ben thought of of Odin shooting up the church. So
I don't think Odin killed everybody. Yeah. Let's do a quick sign off, guys. Where can everybody find you? Then we'll do a little comic related spoiler prediction for the last minute or two here. Lucretia.
Hey guys, you can always find me at LACRETIALYON since there is only one.
You can find me on Twitter at HappyGoJackie.
You can find me at MRDaveChild, because that's my name.
You can find me at Ben Bateman Media. And Ricky, where can the folks find you?
Ricky, maybe.
That will wrap up today's episode. For those of you that don't want any kind of comic book related spoiler, can we get a little spoiler alert shout out real quickly?
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, this is real professional here.
Give it a we'll give it about 10-15 seconds in case somebody has to walk over to the computer and turn it off. We don't want to ruin it.
Bye. All right, now that those dipshits are gone.
Yeah.
Okay. I think one big thing that we heard of is the Amino lady gave it to me was the tattoo
it's
on his back.
Obviously,
it's grandma. We're going to get the family in there, which I am excited for.
Yeah, I really
And I'm real curious to see how they actually play into the family that's in the show, because the father is a preacher and is a lot different than the comic books. So I'm curious to see how the actual what the goal of the family is, unlike the unlike the show.
I think we get this other option, the Sandoval Killers, which is the cowboy. Mm-hmm. He shows up. You know, I think they set it up really nicely with Fjord and DeBlanc being able to respawn constantly. So that shot from the comic where the random angel gets his head blown off, waking up the saint, you don't have to deal with that. Yeah. One of them can do it, and then they get killed.
Well, I would say that if the Saint of All Killers is anything like he is in the comic books, that I think that bullet would actually kill that angel.
Oh, interesting.
And that I don't think it would actually respond, because one of the bullets of the Saint of All Killers says no bullet will create no wound, or like will the only wound it causes is mortal, I think is the line in the comics.
Got it.
So I think if they end up shooting an angel, they wouldn't respond.
Would die. Maybe one of those two angels dies at the end there.
I hope not, but maybe.
What do you think, Frank?
Basically, as we're talking a bit about there, it's like that would Jesse feel like all the allusions to is God in heaven. You know, you feel like this is God's plan for him to have this.
Yeah.
When everything just kind of blows up in his face, and I feel like we're going to lose a lot of people in that town, including I think Emily. I mean, she's got it, which is unfortunate. But that's something where Jesse's going to realize.
Sorry, Miles.
That's where he's going to find out
I think they could honestly set it up that they kill almost everybody in the town.
Operating under that assumption that if this is God's plan to only find out at the end, like, but no, God's hasn't been in heaven, and that's going to give him his motivation to make him pay for everything that's happened.
And we're going to find out that God is actually Miles, right, this entire time, the mayor?
I've been sending that spec script to them for so long.
Is it called Miles to Heaven?
You were like, Seth, thanks for giving me the comic book. I wrote this script. I could play God in it. It's related to Preacher, I promise. Grisha, anything else from you?
No, I think that Dave line just threw me, so. Okay. Yes. Thank you, Dave.
Excellent. Guys, thank you so much for watching and listening. We will be here same time, same place next week. Just 4 episodes left of the season. I'm very excited the way it's going to end. We'll see everybody next week. Rocky Star, I'll be back. Ooh. Thanks for coming by, man.
Dude, thanks so much for having me, gang. It was so much fun. And thanks for watching.
Yeah. How much of our predictions were right? Just tell us.
No.
All of them.
Oh. Yeah.
Except for one.
Oh.
Miles to Heaven.
Yes. I'm like, shit.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Miles to Heaven.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.